introduction, please.
Thank you, Joachim, for the introduction. This is the last talk of this morning. It'll be short. I'm sure you're looking forward to that. It's really a compilation of work that was done by collaborators here from Slack and from Argonne, and I put this together based on their work mainly. The topics I'll cover are I'll go through the basic motivation, why we want to have in situ measurements of the K parameters for undulators for LCLS. I'll talk about this basic scheme that we're going to use where we have two undulators inserted into the beam line at the same time and look at the spontaneous radiation that comes out. Then I'll go over the basic theory of what we should expect from the spectra from two undulators inserted at the same time, particularly when they have a different K value. I'll go over some of our simulation and some complicating factors, details that are of interest in this method before I summarize. You probably know the LCLS consists of is a long undulator, over 130 meters long. It has 33 independent segments, which Heinz Dieter described to you this morning. The tolerance on the K for those segments, for each of those segments, is quite tight. And if the strength of each segment was to become in error, the effect of that would be to dephase the wiggle of the electron beam with respect to the X-rays it's producing. And as a consequence, you lose micro-bunching, and then ultimately you lose FEL power. So we have a tolerance budget based on the reasonable amount of tolerable amount of FEL power loss, and that tolerance budget says that the K values should be within their specified value to 1.5 10 to the minus 4 relative value. Now, they have to be that way not only when we first install them, but also for a long period of time. So it's challenging. And we also are up against some tight tolerances. In order to maintain that, there's implied tolerances on temperature in the undulator hall, for instance. There's alignment tolerances, Heinz Dieter mentioned. And we have to watch out for the effects of radiation. We have very little tolerance for radiation damage. So, and I should also mention that in addition to the known effects that can knock us out of tolerance, when we're looking at 10 to the minus 4 level changes in something over a long period of time, we should expect something that we don't know about now to happen, and we'd be ready to deal with it when it does. We did consider whether we could do in situ measurements, magnetic measurements, conventional magnetic measurements, and decided it was infeasible at this level of precision. So we're only left with measurements which depend on measurement of the properties of the X-ray beam that the undulators produce. Okay, the scheme I'm going to talk about today is, I'll call it a two-segment scheme. You measure the synchrotron radiation, the two segments of undulators are produced at one time. And what you do is you scan one of the undulator segments, you scan the K value by moving it back and forth, the way Heinz Dieter described. Only a few millimeters of motion is required to change the K by a few tenths of a percent. There are other schemes we are also considering, and they differ from this scheme mainly in that they involve the measurement of the radiation of just one segment at a time. We have, for example, a pinhole technique where you put in one segment and then you have a 1 millimeter square pinhole and you sweep it around and try to find the place where the highest average photon energy comes through the pinhole for the first harmonic. And you need to do that measurement for one segment, do it for another segment, and compare the different energies you get. Another technique, angle-integrated edge measurement, is similar, except you integrate over a larger angle and measure the spectrum and look for that high-energy edge of the first harmonic, and the differences between one segment and another tell you what the K value is. And then also we have a method that's under development where we have a reference undulator that's at the end of the undulator line, and you alternately look at the number of photons that come out from the reference undulator and compare it with different undulators up along the line. And from the difference in the photon counting rate, you can infer what the edge of that radiation is doing and the K value that might be different. So we have other schemes, but the one I'm going to talk about today is when you put two in the line and look at the radiation. We found that, and I'll go into details here, that when you do put two segments in a line and you move one up and down, that you get the steepest slope of the high energy side of the first harmonic when the K values are matched, they're the same. And so the technique we would use is match all the undulators sequentially down the line and then adjust them a known amount to get the required taper that we want. Okay, the theory that it's based on was derived by Zhurong Huang. The expression at the bottom here is the spectral intensity is a function of the detuning parameters for both the two segments. The detuning parameter is just the difference between difference between the RF frequency, the X-ray frequency, and the resonant frequency of the undulator. If the two undulators are the same, omega 1 and then omega 2 would be the same. If the K values are different, the resonant energy is resonant frequency is different. It's also dependent on the angle. Here it's represented in a sort of a normalized way. This is the definition of what that angle is, and this is a polar angle from the central ray. And it's dependent on one more parameter. That's the phase difference between the undulator segments. So if you have two segments and there's a phase difference between from leaving one segment and going into the start of the next segment, that comes into the expression. The expression consists of two terms. Each of the terms looks like what you would get from one segment, except they differ by a phase factor here. You take the modulus of this and you get some interference effects that give you a unique shape for this two undulator spectrum. Okay, this is what happens when you integrate over angle. I forgot to mention, but this expression here is at a particular angle. So if you integrate over some angle, you get a different spectrum. Integrate that previous expression over a different amount of angles. And this figure here shows you what you would get. If in the blue curve, we have sort of a very small angle of integration. That's represented by 2 microradians. The pink curve is if you integrate over 7.5 microradians. And then the blue curve is 15 microradians, which is about as large as we can integrate for the first segment before we start to hit the vacuum chamber. As you can see, this edge here, I mentioned it a couple times, that edge, the edge of the first harmonic radiation there is basically determined by the radiation that comes within the first 7 or 8 microradians for LCLS. And additional integration doesn't add to that signal. So we have to be careful to make sure that we get at least the 7 or 8 microradians of radiation into the detector to be sure that we're not getting the wrong amount of radiation that'll affect the slope here. If you were to zoom in on that leading edge, the steepest slope, you would see, and then run 2 different cases, this is what you would get. The pink case is if you have 2 identical segments, same K value. Okay, thank you. And then the blue case is if they're slightly detuned. You can visually, there's not much of an effect, but in fact, there's a 3% difference in slope for a 0.1% change in K. Now I'll get into the details, some of the details in the simulation. I'll cover the energy jitter. We have a significant amount of energy jitter we have to deal with. There's this complicating business of aligning the central rays and then the phase difference, and show you our results. Okay, we have a beam energy that jitters at 0.1%, and we have an assumed detector, which is a narrow band Bragg crystal detector. So it just takes a very narrow slice out of the spectrum, and all you see is that slice being randomly selected from an area around the peak that you're interested in. And what we're going to do is measure the energy of the beam on each pulse, which we can do to 3 to the -5, and then reconstruct the spectrum by correlating the measured energy against the measured rate. The natural jitter is almost sufficient to do this over the range of interest. We'll probably do a little bit of tuning on the electron beam to get it to work a little bit better. Okay, we did look at the phase differences and the effect of phase differences between two segments and found that within our tolerance, the 20 degrees of phase error, there's no significant effect in phase difference. And now the alignment error, this figure at the bottom shows the sort of the core of radiation that affects our measurement. So this radiation is what goes into our leading edge, this plus or minus six or seven microradians in this case. It shows that if the beam pointing angle is different from zero from the vacuum chamber axis by more than about 8 microradians, we'll start to scrape off some of this critical radiation, and it'll affect our spectrum. So we have to make sure that we can get that lined up. This is a simulated data. We did this by taking the theoretical curve and then generating noise on top of the theoretical curve. You can see it almost lines up on the curve, the little points of the noise. There's 9 different spectra here corresponding to 9 positions of the undulator that we're scanning. Each one has a different K value, which we know the difference between the K values. We don't know the absolute. Here's the numbers that we use for the noise that goes into the simulated data. The most significant are the energy measurement resolution the energy measurement resolution is the most significant factor in this case. The photon statistics are not really very significant for the parameters we chose. We have a fit to the, if you take one of those curves, we fit to a cubic term, extract the steepest slope, which is shown here, and then that number becomes representative of that position. And then we do the same thing 9 times and plot the steepest slopes for each of the 9 points, and you get a parabola of steepest slopes versus position, or delta K, known delta K in this case. When you fit that parabola, you can determine the zero, the maximum value of the steepest slope is equal to zero to within 0.004%. These are 100 shots per point. We could go to more shots and reduce that statistics if we needed to. Okay, summarizing, we found that scanning the K value of one segment, keeping a second segment fixed, and then fitting the measured spectrum appears to be a useful method for determining the relative K values of nearby segments. We can deal with the energy jitter by measuring the energy from pulse to pulse. We can deal with the beam angle energy correlation by steering the beam. I didn't tell you how we're going to do that, but we have a way of doing that. And then we expect the phase differences to be negligible for our specifications. Thank you.
Thank you, Jim. Other questions?
Did you estimate the background from the radiation, off-axis radiation, which will be reflected from the walls of vacuum chamber? As I understand, it has to be huge, the background of this.
We have looked at that background issue. There is off-axis radiation that comes from harmonics, which is at that angle, has the same energy that we're interested in. If that radiation comes from near the end of the undulator, it can escape. If it comes from the beginning, we found that after a couple reflections, it's pretty much lost. But we haven't estimated the background level we get from that off-axis radiation from the end undulators yet. So it's one of the things that could come in there.
Okay, thank you.
More questions? If not, let's thank the speaker again and end the session.